Thursday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. The Ducks taking on the Ottawa Senators as the Eastern Atlantic road trip, Atlantic Division road trip continues. The Ducks losing this one 2-1 in overtime. And what was kind of a weird game. I mean, obviously 4 p.m. start, so maybe not a lot of people got to see it. But for the majority of this game, let's say about the first, I don't know, 50 or so minutes, just not a whole lot of action. The Ducks not really, in my opinion, imposing their will. I thought that they made the Senators look like a much better team than they are, as opposed to a team that is vying for Rasmus Dahlin at this point in the season. And look, I mean, this is what the Senators do. They slow it down. They muck up the play. And the Ducks aren't really the type of team to bust a game open exactly. They don't have – well, they don't always have it, and this was just one of those nights where they didn't have it.
Yep. I mean, yeah. It's a game where it's kind of interesting because this is going to be kind of a – not a case study, but an interesting game, because if you look at the stats overall, the Ducks – we're at 63% Corsi at 5-on-5, and the issue wasn't the shot attempts, it was the shot, and it was a shot quality issue. And even though they were at 63% in terms of Corsi 4, they were at 57% in scoring chance 4, so there was a pretty big drop-off. And then if you go into Corsica and look at expected goals, Otto actually had the better expected goal total on the night, which kind of shows you that even though, and that's just an even strength, if you go to all situations, expected goals 4 and 5-on-5 was 1.72 for Ottawa, 1.64 for the Ducks at 5-on-5. In all situations, it was 3.66 for Ottawa and 2.86 for the Ducks. So it's one of those games where even though the Ducks control play and I think made a really good push at the end, the quality wasn't there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at Brandon Montour and Francois Beauchemin tonight, and I mean, in that first period, a little bit of the second period, just zero awareness of the defensive zone, allowing passes through the slot where there's really no business for that puck to go through, just really lackadaisical. And, you know, like, I know I rag on them a lot, but, like, tonight it was, to me, it was beyond obvious. And you look, and the stats certainly back it up. I mean, those two out there together, a -7 in scoring chances, -6 in shot attempts, -6 in unblocked shot attempts. This is all at 5-on-5, so... you know, like, it typically that shouldn't bring you down, but I feel like that certainly didn't help. And, you know, on those nights where maybe your stars aren't going to carry you to victory, you need other parts of your lineup to step up. And tonight, the Ducks just didn't really get that. And it's, you know, it's all well and good that Adam Henrique has been scoring in bunches lately as a third-line center. But, you know, there are five other guys in that bottom six, and I don't think the Ducks are really getting a whole lot out of them right now.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely say that with this game. You kind of hit the nail on the head right there.
Oh, thank you.
I'm all about giving you compliments right now.
Yeah, so for those who might not have noticed yet, I'm quite ill. Actually, I had to call off work today, but we are soldiering through. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, I had to leave my apartment to go coach some hockey at the end of this game, so I wasn't able to catch it. Catch the end of the third period and the overtime. But Jake, being the trusty co-host that he is, did indeed watch it. And so, Jake, tell us a little bit about what went down tonight and kind of like from your perspective, you know, your takeaways. that sounds about right from what I was seeing in our Slack chat.
Yep. No, I mean, I really caught the third, so that's what I'm going to kind of talk on right now. And there's
Well, I mean, that's where all the goals happen.
Yeah, so. And for the people that follow me on Twitter, I kind of promised a rant. So here's that rant.
Here we go. Get your popcorn ready.
Be specifically on the Wagner penalty. And there's so many things that are so frustrating about this play. And I think that at the end of the day, you look at this, the penalty took, and you can kind of say that, yeah, Wagner cost the Ducks a point here. So if you didn't catch the game and you're just kind of jumping in and trying to hear what I'm talking about, on the play, it was in the third period, probably with about 12 to 15 minutes left in the game, somewhere around there. Wagner's line has the puck in the offensive zone. He actually does a really good job, draws a tripping call, and then the puck's kind of cycled around. The Ducks get the extra man on the ice. Probably about 10 to 20 seconds go by would be my guess between the penalty and then eventually Antoine Vermette kind of just last second heaving into the corner, hoping another Duck can get to it. And as that happens, one of the Ottawa Senators comes, clearly has the lane to the puck, gonna get the puck, ends up getting the puck, ref blows his whistle, and then right after he's got the puck, Wagner finishes his check on him. And it's not like Wagner was close to him. Wagner went out of his way to make the hit, and it was maybe a half second to a second, maybe even a little bit more, after the whistle was blown. And it's just idiotic is the best way to put it. Because there's a couple things on here. The broadcast crew was mad about it simply because
naturally.
Yeah. Well, and because optically it was called roughing. It was just a check. I could see how if maybe you look at it like that, maybe you don't see it as roughing. But there's a few things I kind of want to say on that. That let's go back to way back when there was touch icing. The last time that was in play, if the guy would go back and have the play on the puck and touch the puck, and you hit him after he touched it, you were going to get a roughing call. There was no doubt about it. That was going to happen. The ref was going to call that. That wasn't something that was going to be allowed. This is the exact same situation. The Ottawa player was going to touch the puck. The whistle was going to be blown dead. There was absolutely zero situational awareness there by Wagner. And on top of that, it makes no sense at all, because you know the refs are going to be looking for a chance to even it up in that situation. And so why even put your team in that situation? Even if you don't think you hit him that hard, why even engage? Why engage when your team's about to get a power play, which you could with 12, 15 minutes left, and you could potentially get the lead in the game? And because you take that penalty, it goes to, I think it went to 4-on-4, it may have went to 5-on-5. I was very frustrated at the time. And during that, Silverberg takes another penalty, and the Ducks get scored on. And so, yes, there's a bunch of things that happen and a lot of variables at play, but you can go back to that play, and if the Wagner doesn't make that hit and just realizes, all right, they're about to touch it, I'm going to back off, we're going to get the power play, let's score here, let's take the lead. If he doesn't make that hit and thinks like that, Ducks very well could have taken the lead on the power play, ended the game 1-0, escape with 2 points.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Wagner has become known, at least, you know, around the Ducks, for always finishing his check. And, I mean, that's why, like, to me, finishing your check isn't always the smartest play. It becomes such an instinct. Let's fast forward here to the Senators' goal that would put them up 1-0. So I believe this was on the ensuing power play, right? This is what came of all these penalties, or was this after?
Yeah, so essentially it was like I said, I can't remember if it was 4-on-4 or 5-on-5, but then as that was going on, Silverberg took a penalty in that situation to put the Ducks shorthanded.
Yes, so on the ensuing power play, Mike Hoffman from the top, from right from the blue line, just, I believe it was a slap shot, and
yes,
Bobby Ryan gets in front of Ryan Miller and screens him, and, you know, the puck goes in off of Bobby Ryan, and Ryan Miller's up in arms, the Ducks challenge the play, and it was ruled that it was no goalie interference, just from what I saw. When the goal happened, you know, on the replay, it didn't really look like goal interference to me. Just because I don't know. I feel like after the puck goes in, Miller initiates contact with Bobby Ryan, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think it was even close. I haven't really looked at the goaltender interference rule that closely in regards to this play tonight, but to me, it's not as if Bobby Ryan, kind of made his movement or impaired Ryan Miller's ability to make a play on the puck. Bobby Ryan seemed to kind of be established in the crease beforehand. It's not as if he caught Miller. You can make the argument, I think if you're in the crease, you can't stop the goaltender from making a play on the puck. So I think if they were maybe to apply the rules as stringent as they would have, as they could, maybe you could find it. But I think overall, especially with over this past weekend with what Gary Bettman had said, that they told the referees to kind of back off goaltender interference and kind of stop nitpicking it as much, this was clearly going to be one that stood.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really look like a whole lot from my end. I mean, yes, there is some very small contact, but I don't think it affect, like you said, didn't affect Brian Miller's ability to make the save. And then after the goal, once the puck is in, Miller kind of tries to sell it a little bit. I mean, kind of wraps his arm around Bobby Ryan and, like, kind of flails a little bit. So, obviously didn't work. But then the Ducks kind of go on a rampage. I mean, you look at these numbers in the third period. The Ducks just really, I mean, kind of crushed the Senators from a shot attempt perspective. I mean, 19-4 at 5-on-5. Scoring chances 8-1. Mm-hmm. High danger chances 3-0. So, they responded big time.
Yeah, but part of me also will say that that's how Guy Boucher wants his team to play when they're up a goal in the third period. I mean, we have to take it and kind of look at it in two different perspectives. Yes, the Ducks looked good going forward, kind of attacking, trying to get those chances. But this is also an Ottawa Senators team that made the conference final by sitting back on leads and defending and Guy Boucher's neutral zone trap, basically. The 1-3-1?
Yeah. It's an extremely passive setup.
Yeah, and they were basically conceding and just trying to keep everything to the outside. And, I mean, the Ducks did get their chances, but it wasn't as if there were that many of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. But the Ducks do end up tying it.
So yes.
So it brought us through that.
And I will say that when they ended up pulling Miller, the guys that were out there did a really good job of, unlike kind of earlier, prior to that, they were kind of being kept to the outside, not getting a whole lot to the inside, kind of all perimeter shots and hoping for a rebound, which there were some, and they tried to capitalize on them, but didn't. When they got to the 6-on-5 situation, they did a really good job of passing the puck across, like we've talked about in the past, the Royal Road, and there were two great chances set up with that. Raquel made one great feed to Kessler, who Condon just made a ridiculous save on, and then Raquel finds Kessler again with, like, 40 seconds left, and Kessler buries it. And so it was a really, really good job of them with the extra man to really take advantage. And they engaged in some board battles and made sure that there was the extra man there and came out with the puck. And so that's exactly what you want to see when you have the extra man. You need to win those battles along the board. You need to get possession out of there. You need to maintain it in the zone and then create something. And they did.
Yeah, I thought that sorry, I'm like dying over here. But I thought that the power play throughout the game up until, I guess, the end of that third period wasn't really creating as much east-west offense as we've been seeing in the last couple weeks. And we have been seeing Corey Perry on that first unit, but he wasn't really prominent on that unit tonight. They were kind of shuffling between Silverberg and Henrique on that first unit. And I don't know if that's an attempt to kind of beef up the second unit a little bit, which has obviously been not very good. They were kind of doing what we saw out of the Ducks in the power play in the playoffs last season, and even going back to, you know, most recent years, just kind of setting up for wrist shots with screens in front, which, like, statistically is one of the toughest ways to score, because the further out the shot, if there's no one-timer, it's just harder to score. So good to see, I guess, from a Ducks perspective that in that third period they went back to that. But to overtime we go, and not a very long overtime, right?
Nope, and actually kind of backtracking a little bit, with about 30, so Ducks scored, then there was about 30, 40 seconds left. Basically right away, Henrique catches one of the centers with a high stick. It was a legit call. I think that there were a lot of people frustrated because it seemed like there were a couple high sticks or things that were let go earlier in the period, but it's a high stick. It's going to be called. I forgot who Henrique actually caught, like I said. But so Ducks go on the kill and start 3-on-3 on the penalty kill, and it did not last very long.
Yeah, just a beautiful one-timer from Erik Karlsson to put it away. And, I mean, I don't know. If you're the Ducks, and, I mean, although the Senators have been largely atrocious this season, I feel like they do have talented players, and if you keep giving them opportunities like that, they're going to make good on it.
Well, not only that, but I think the penalty killers really did a poor job in that 4-on-3 situation. They just, I mean, you watch it, they kind of gave up the zone. Ottawa was able to do whatever they wanted. Manson was the only one who really was probably doing something productive by guarding the guy in front of the net. Lindholm, I think, was tracking, I can't remember who it was, but whoever had the puck at the top of the zone that fed Karlsson, and Kessler kind of is just in no man's land, not really kind of trying to cover any space, knocking on any passing lane, and it kind of ends up that Lindholm and Kessler end up in a similar spot where they're trying to stop the shot from the point, and I believe it was Duchesne actually that had it. And then it allows just a completely open passing lane and for him to pass it to Carlson, and a completely open shooting lane for Carlson. And it's just, it was really poor penalty killing.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a combination of great players and just kind of a system that we know hasn't really worked in recent years. So, you know, now with tonight's outcome, I believe, where are the Ducks now in the standings? I don't have it in front of me just now.
I have them open, so let me just see. I want to actually just update it really quickly to see if any of the scores... Yeah, so I believe all the scores have gone final except for the Blackhawks-Canucks game, and the Canucks are winning 3-2-2. And so the Ducks are currently sitting in third in the Pacific.
Right. So the Ducks hang on.
Yes.
Which, if you're a Ducks fan, is good. Still a point ahead of the Kings, who do have a game in hand. But, look, I mean, the Ducks are definitely, I guess they did themselves a little favor by at least getting that extra point tonight.
Yeah, definitely, because that point keeps them ahead of the Kings. It keeps them 2 points ahead of Calgary, and both those teams have games in hand, so you need to start actually kind of extending and getting a lead on them. And then you're level on points with Colorado. You're two back behind Dallas. So it's really bunched up. And if you're going to lose, you at least need to get a point out of it. And kind of that's what happened tonight. The thing that I think is frustrating looking at this game is if you were to kind of look at this road trip, this is kind of the game you would have circled as, well, that's a game they need to get 2 points out of. But on that same note, the Boston game would have been one you looked at being like, they may lose overall.
So, right. So it kind of evens out.
Yeah, you got to take the good with the bad. And coming into these two games, if you were to say the Ducks were playing the Bruins, then the Senators, and they got 3 out of 4 points, you'd take it.
You wouldn't
want the 1 point coming from the Senators, but...
Right, yeah. And the Senators are just so bad. Let's see. They have 41 points to date this season. They are, 15 points out of a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. So, not a very good team. Fingers crossed that Erik Karlsson gets traded. So, a bit of news here. We got some updates today on the injury status of John Gibson. And so, it was reported by Eric Stevens of the Orange County Register that... John Gibson is listed as day-to-day with a lower body injury. It is not related to Patrice Bergeron's shot that drilled him in the chest area against Boston, obviously. And he will be reevaluated again. No timetable on that reevaluation, at least from this tweet. So Red O'Bara was called up and backed up Ryan Miller today. But this is kind of a... There's a bit of a positive tone to some of these reports, but it's certainly... You would have rather it been, I feel like, the shot than re-aggravating,
yes,
presumably, the knee that was collided into by Blake Wheeler.
Yes, I can actually remember when the... because I was listening to that on the radio when that happened, and they were talking about him down. I can remember actually thinking, I was like, I really hope it's just a stinger from the shot. Because that would be a much better scenario than his knee being re-aggravated.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you know, John Gibson has had... you know, his troubles with injury in the past, and, you know, Stevens wrote a little bit on that today about, you know, how is he approaching mentally, you know, the fact that he's injured again. You know, it feels like he probably has suffered an injury in pretty much every season he's been with the Ducks, and, you know, you don't want to label a guy as injury prone, especially, I mean, the play where he got hurt recently, I mean, that's not on him. That's not on him at all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot more to add. I think it's definitely hard. You don't want to put that label on him, like you said. But they're all kind of different types of injuries. And so it's hard, but I'd be lying if I wasn't concerned about it.
Well, you have to be. I mean, it's the knee. And I mean,
yeah,
goaltenders... you know, knees are pretty crucial to what they do. And I mean, I don't know. It's a difficult situation. Ryan Miller obviously played pretty well tonight. Can't really blame him on the goal from Bobby Ryan. Can't really blame him on the overtime goal either. But I don't know, if you're the Ducks, this has to be concerning. It would appear we've got a little action in the Mixler chat here, Jake.
Yeah, both Literate Gal and GC Ducks Fan kind of bring up a similar point that Literate Gal brought up. Jake, can any game this be handicapped this year? They've surprised and lost at games no one predicted. And GC Ducks Fan brings up typical Ducks fashion. They lose the game that they theoretically should have won. And so I think that kind of both hits on the same point that the Ducks this season and kind of as a whole will sometimes lose the games that they should win. But one thing I'll kind of say on that, and kind of on a more positive tone, every team kind of goes through this. The season's really, really long, and we're at game 50 or 52, and yeah, getting up for a bad Ottawa team.
Yeah.
In late January, I guess now early February.
Yeah, happy February, folks.
Yep. My birthday month.
Be on the lookout for a birthday pod.
Yep. These types of games are going to happen, and I think that as frustrated as I was at the beginning of this podcast, positive is they got a point out of it. They took a point when the effort wasn't exactly there, when their best effort wasn't there. And they weren't fully ready and up for it. So, I mean, small positive. You'd like to see them kind of put their best foot forward in every single game. But over the course of an 82-game season, that's not always going to happen. Especially when you're playing a bad team. It's easy to get up for Boston. It's easy to get up for Toronto. It's not easy to get up for a bad Ottawa team with Guy Boucher as their coach.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, totally. So we got a couple questions here. You want to hit them?
Yeah, let's go for it. So Angus Cone brings up, what do you guys think of the first line tonight? How long do you think they'll be together? So the first line tonight, correct me if I'm wrong, for majority of the game, it was Getzlaf, Raquel, Silverberg.
Yep. And they did quite well, but I think there's some score effects mixed into there.
Yeah, and I think that they probably created the most chances. I'm kind of looking it up really quickly right now.
The stats are certainly glowing tonight.
Yeah, so I'm going to just very quickly do the adjustment for them. So if we adjust them, Getzlaf, Raquel, Silverberg were all over 70% in Corsi forward percentage. All of them were over 70% in scoring chances. All of them over 80% in high danger. So they were really good, but this is, I think, the third or fourth game probably of us having that top line. Right. Maybe second.
But what is there to really change, though? Because I feel like you need Kasha on the third line.
Yeah. I don't know. That third line hasn't been good. And actually, one of the writers on the site, Benny, wants to actually shoot that line into the sun.
Well, as presently constituted, it is Henry, Kasha, and Richie, right?
Yes, and they were not that great tonight, all things considered. All of them were kind of near the bottom for the Ducks in terms of relative Corsi 4 percentage. They had that really good stretch for about a week or two coming off the bye week, but they've seemed to settle down a little bit. And not just, I mean, Henrique's been scoring mainly on the power play, but they aren't creating that much anymore. And so,
yeah,
I'd be interested in Henrique, Perry, and JT Brown being thrown together and then probably put Kasha up with
Getzlaf. Reunite the second line.
Yep.
That's kind
of what I'm thinking.
It's tough to say because, I mean, you know, when they were rolling that third line, it was a lot. You look at some of the teams that were playing, and you look at, you know, Pittsburgh, LA, these are not, like, staunch defensive teams.
Yeah.
And so, not that Ottawa necessarily is either, but they play a much different game. And Boston, I mean, is way up there in terms of possession. So, you know, maybe as the going gets a little tougher, we're kind of seeing that maybe this isn't a go-to sort of, like, possession-driving third line. And that's, that's bad news for the Ducks, and they're going to have to continue doing some shuffling. Although I would give it a few more games. You know, I'm not ready. Like, you have to kind of let the sample go to work. You know, you can't just a couple bad games and all right, they're toast. I mean, there's still a little hockey left to be played before judging this team.
Yeah. All right. One name that I saw, I think it was thrown around on our Slack chat today, maybe. Kind of I was thinking about in terms of a name coming back to the Ducks, actually. Pat Maroon. He's available.
Yeah. Do you want Pat Maroon on your team right now?
I mean, I've always been a big Pat Maroon fan.
I mean, he's certainly an upgrade over a Richie? Lot of guys. A lot of
Yeah.
That's a given. But
Richie
is
Pat Maroon without the hands.
Yeah, no, totally.
And I mean, my only thought on it quickly is that he's worked well with Getzlaf in the past. You can throw him on the left side and put Raquel on the right hand side. And I don't know, just a thought. And we're already paying half his salary, so
right. Yeah, a pretty visceral reaction in the Mixler chat right now. People are screaming no.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
maybe not your most popular take here.
Yeah. Dude. I mean, that's not surprising, seeing as he's a little bit of a shit disturber when the Ducks play Edmonton. So that's not exactly shocking, but I think if he came back, people would love him again.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he could contribute to this team. I mean, I don't know if he's, you know, kind of a cure-all for this team, but
no. The
more, as we've seen with the Henrik acquisition, I mean, the more competent guys you have on your bottom six, you know, the better off you'll be. We got a couple more questions in here. You want to hit on them real quick?
Sorry, I'm just laughing from everyone insulting me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. People are just letting you have it right now.
Yeah, I know. I get. Yep. Thanks, literate gal. Sorry, I'm looking at this. All right, here we go. Paulette. My concern is that Gibson continues to be very injury prone. We will always need a pretty good backup goalie for him. Bernier wasn't bad last year as a backup, but we need a better backup than that because Gibson will always miss a lot of games. You want to take a shot at this, or I've got some
spicy
thoughts.
I mean, honestly, in the NHL right now, oh man, Josh Manson took a faceoff tonight. That's hilarious.
Wait, he did?
I'm watching the replay right now.
What?
How? Oh, because let's see, Kessler was kicked out,
and
they had Lindholm. Yeah, they had Lindholm and Manson out there. So I guess Manson took
Felix
it. That was pretty comical.
Felix is watching a replay of the game for those wondering.
Yes. Yes, sorry about for the completely random aside here, but you know, like I talked about this, I wrote about this when Ryan Miller was acquired. I feel like there really aren't too many better backup goalies in the NHL right now. I mean, he's pretty much as good as you're going to get it. If you wanted someone younger, then you're talking about a 1A, 1B situation, and I don't think anyone really wants that again after, you know, the era of Frederik Andersen and John Gibson. So I think they're just fine with Ryan Miller. Well, I should say they're as fine as they can be. I don't know if there's really a guy out there who is like a considerable upgrade at backup goalie.
Yeah.
You know, like Gibson was on a very healthy streak this season, and I really don't want to make anything of that injury because it's just complete bad luck. Like, what was he supposed to do? Just, like, vanish in that moment?
Yeah. Well, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, though, in that in the modern game, you can't just have one good goalie. You need to have two. You need to have a solid backup. You look at every single team, they have someone there that can kind of take the load off the starting goalie. The days of a goaltender playing 70 games are gone. If you want to have sustained success, your starter's going to play around 60 games in that range. Because look at what's going on in Edmonton right now. You have Talbot's playing terrible this year because he played 80 plus games last year.
And way too much.
It wears on you, and it wears on you not that season. It wears on you your next season when your body hasn't been given enough time to recover and can't go through that same exact grind. I think they played their backup like 10 total games last year, and it's just
I mean it's not smart.
No,
it's not where you want to be. And you know, like I guess if your backup is, I mean, they started the season with Jonas Gustafsson. I don't know if people remember that, the Oilers did, and this is one of my favorite all-time like Peter Chiarelli quotes where he said, yeah, we know Gustafsson's stats haven't been very good, but we think he's a pretty good player. Like, that's basically what he said. It's like, Peter, like, what are you saying? Like, Like, you really think, like, that's something that people are going to, like, maybe he probably just doesn't care at all. But it's kind of tough. It's kind of tough to sell your fans in a backup when you say, yeah, you know, objectively speaking, he has not been a league average goaltender. But, you know, we think he's capable of magically becoming one behind our, like, I guess, okay defense.
Well, and now they've gone out and acquired a pretty good backup in Al Montoya. And their media...
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not worth going too long about.
That's true.
But, like, basically, it's like today there was a tweet, you know, Al Montoya doesn't talk to the media on game day, and, like, the Edmonton media, in particular TSN reporter, took offense to it and said that he was, like, fragile, or that he was, like, his fragile in his preparation, this and that, and kind of the things they were saying about Jordan Eberle when, you know, that report came out that, you know, the pressure was getting to him. And, you know, like, I don't know who actually cares what the backup goalie has to say on game day. And also, secondly, look, Bell Let's Talk, you know, mental health awareness was yesterday.
That's true.
And it kind of flies in the face. It flies in the face of the fact that, hey, some guys have different needs mentally to kind of handle this pressure cooker that is professional sports. So, just a very poor display of character, and I don't know, reprehensible in my mind.
Yeah, and I just kind of really touching on it quickly, and then we can move on. I feel like most goalies don't talk to the media on the day of the game. I feel like that's a normal thing.
I just don't care. Yeah. quite honestly, yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's a fairly normal thing. We've gotten a couple of questions in the Mixler chat kind of related to Freddie Anderson. One kind of, Paul, it brings up... regarding our argument about needing two goalies in this league, should we trade to get Freddie back? I think the issue with Freddie and having a backup like him would be salary. And that was, I think, what it came down to with him, is the Ducks didn't want to give him the money that he was asking for simply because of salary cap concerns. And I think it was also them doing it so that he could be a starter somewhere, and they didn't want to have the 1A, 1B situation.
I mean, honestly, though, like, Frederick Anderson's a starting goaltender.
Yes, agreed.
Like, I know some people in Ducks land may not look back on his tenure that fondly, but on a very basic level, he's a younger guy still in his prime, still a very consistent starting goaltender. So,
yeah.
Look, I know people want an upgrade, but that's not where you want to be spending all your money is on your goalies. I mean, look no further than the Dallas Stars a couple years ago, where they had like $12 million wrapped up in Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi.
And I also
not great.
And I also think a 1A 1B situation isn't exactly healthy for the two goalies.
I don't think so either.
Just as a quick little personal story, I was a goalie in water polo, played in high school and club and college. And kind of I was put in some situations where there were certain games where I didn't know if I was starting or if I wasn't starting. And just kind of it puts you in a really weird place where when you end up being in the game, you kind of overexert yourself and make mistakes. And
yeah, no, I mean, that's completely fair. I have actually a very similar story where when I was playing goalie for UCI, our school team, I mean, like, I started my freshman year, I was on the kind of the B team. We had like an All-American starter on the top team, so I kind of knew I wasn't going to play, but I had a really, really good season. Spent the next year on the B team again because he was still around, but then the next year, you know, like, we get this new guy, and, you know, great guy, like, I would consider a friend and everything, but he was clearly the newcomer, and I was like, I thought I kind of earned my keep, you know, no pun intended, as a goalkeeper. And it just so happened that, you know, they put me in for like three games for the top team in the first tournament. Basically got lit up just because it was kind of like do or die. Didn't even know I was going to start for half the game. And, you know, I end up never really getting that shot or not really making the most of the opportunity. And I totally feel you there. It's really hard because as an athlete, you want to know your role. You don't want to be guessing every game. Am I going to play? Am I not? You know, what do they think of me? Why am I not starting? Like, these are really tough thoughts to kind of process. And I mean, that's why you don't want that situation.
Well, and goaltending in general is just such a mental position. And at the end of the day, you can be your own worst enemy in that position. You could have all the tools, but if you're mentally not preparing yourself correctly, you're kind of not allowing yourself or giving yourself your best chance to succeed, and kind of doing that to your goalies, it's really hurting the team more than it's helping.
Absolutely, yeah.
And kind of going back to kind of an original point of the Ducks' backup, I think Miller's fine. I think he's one of the best
backups. He's been great. Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no reason to change.
There's no reason to even look for an upgrade, because I don't think there are many upgrades that they could get in that position. Actually, last year, I think I wanted the Ducks to actually get Miller to upgrade on Bernier at the trade deadline.
I mean, he's been rumored for a long time to be trying to join the Ducks.
Yep. GC Ducks fan brings up, did you think the refs got the no goalie interference call correct? He may have jumped in a little bit late. I think we both kind of said that yes. I think, especially with the way that Gary Bettman addressed it at the All-Star game, for the that the refs are overthinking it right now, and for them to really just trust their gut on it and kind of go with the call on the ice unless there's something kind of egregious there, it was the right call.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've talked about it here, but just to let everyone on in, I mean, look, like, there's no way. Like, I didn't see it. You know, it was very, very, very marginal at best. I don't think it affected Miller, so... Paul Lipp brings up here, Miller's great, but not sure how long he'll keep on playing.
That's a good point.
You know, that's probably the most you can say.
Yeah.
Against Gibson, I mean, against Miller, and I think it's fair. But at the same time, I guess my one kind of, the saving grace here might be that he hasn't played a ton.
Yes.
In recent years. And so he's kind of got stuff left in the tank. And yeah. So I wouldn't expect him to crash and burn. But, you know, at his age... The drop off can happen out of nowhere, and it can happen very precipitously.
He's on a 2-year deal, correct?
Yes, one more year after this.
I'll be curious, because the Ducks have a really highly touted goaltender in the prospect or in their system.
Talking about Eriksson Ek.
Eriksson Ek.
Yeah.
Who?
I feel like he'll be in the AHL though.
Yeah, but I'm just kind of wondering if around that time, if maybe next year he makes the transition over to North America, which maybe he won't, being a little bit younger, but. Maybe they have him kind of waiting in the wings to become that backup for a while.
I mean, it's so tough to say. I mean, the reports are certainly good on Eriksson Ek. I mean, there's also guys like Kevin Boyle.
Yes.
You know, Angus Redmond, who are down in the ECHL, I believe. So, you know, there are guys, and I think a lot of them have actually had good stats, you know, in recent years in their respective leagues. So, you know, I think that that's an area of strength for the Ducks. And really, you know, if Gibson misses a handful of games a season, I think you can live with that as long as you have a good backup. And, you know, backup goalies are not the hardest thing to find. Yeah. So I would kind of temper my concern a little bit if I'm a Ducks fan right now.
The goaltending market's fairly soft. I mean, look at what – who was it? Look at what Calvin Picard?
Yeah.
Look at what he went for. Look at what –
Yeah.
Look at what the guy they played, Condon. Look at what he went for last season.
Exactly.
He went on draft waivers. Picks.
Yeah. Yeah, or he was waivers, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's not that hard to find a backup.
And you just never know what goalie will just kind of be the next, you know, Scott Darling, Jeff Glass, so...
Hamburglar.
Andrew Hammond. It's a roll of the dice, so I think the Ducks have probably one of the surest values in the league at backup. I think that the numbers certainly back that up this season, and I don't know. Wouldn't be too concerned if I'm a Ducks fan.
And we can wrap it up after this, but Chat One wanted to bring up that he was wondering if I was drunk on Miller Lite by saying the Jets aren't cup contenders.
Well, explain yourself, Jake.
I mean, I feel like I explained myself decently. The fact that Trouba's out, the fact that
goaltending's not proven,
the fact that Scheifele's still out, the fact that Wheeler's slowing down a bit. I believe, didn't they lose tonight to Vegas?
Yes, I think they did.
They lost in overtime.
Yeah, also, overtime.
Also, I'm not feeling good about the Avalanche anymore.
Really? You pivoted?
Because McKinnon's out for 4 weeks.
Oh, that's so brutal.
Yeah, so...
I mean, and he's a Hart Trophy nominee, in my opinion,
so
this season.
Him going down really makes that look different, although they did win today, but...
Right. I mean, we'll see. Believe in your Lanch. You got to stay true to your bit.
That's a good point, but I may be pulling off the Flames now and going on the Jets, making the playoffs. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's a moving target.
It really is. So, Literate Gal was asking here, you know, has Red O'Bara been good this season in the AHL? Currently rocking a .920 save percentage, so he's been quite good. One of the bright spots on a team that's kind of struggled this season.
Yeah.
And he's been getting the call-up every time, so I think that goes to show that they trust him.
He is a bit older, though. I looked this up because I was curious. He is 31 years old. So
right, yeah.
He's not a younger guy that will kind of be in that position for a while. Shatch One saying Winnipeg will beat Nashville in the playoffs. That's not happening. Nashville is going to just roll over teams.
It sounds like Nashville will add another piece at the deadline.
Really? Their piece wasn't Mike Fisher?
God. Yeah, he just so happened to unretire. He just took half the season off. Yeah, it's really a believable story. But yeah, I was reading, I believe it was either Craig Custance or Pierre LeBrun today or yesterday, and it looks like they're going to do something else here, and I don't know what that something else is going to be. So we'll see. I mean, I still think that even if they don't change anything with their team, that this is, you know, a top, like, two team in the NHL right now, along with the Vegas Golden Knights.
No.
That's no, all I got. I just said that to mess with you.
Yep, I know. I hate you too. I'm actually sipping on a good beer, I hope you know. I'm sipping on a Mango Even Keel right now. Much better than your Miller Lights.
Oh, please. Oh, please. Miller Lights, great. I don't think I'll be drinking any Miller Lite anytime soon, though, because
you need to get some health.
I am very, very feeling not great. Yep. I can't even put grammar together.
I mean,
go ahead.
Could you not be feeling good because the Ducks are going to be playing Montreal next game?
Yeah, it's the Montreal flu. Whatever. I don't want to talk about that team. They lost again tonight. And I was reading today with Pierre LeBrun's article that there's a chance that, like, no one gets traded from the Habs this deadline. So
that would be the worst thing possible for that team.
I don't think this team is as bad as its own, but it's in dire need of, like, something to kind of another star, and that's not easy to acquire. So Mark Bergevin hopefully will not be back next season. I don't really see how he could, but this team is very capable of insanity, so we'll see. All right, we got anything else here? Are we ready to wrap it up?
I think we're ready to wrap up. I think you probably should give your voice a little bit of a break. I did my best to kind of help you out a little bit there.
You did great. You did great. The listeners did great to kind of feed us some ammo here. Appreciate everyone tuning in. It's always good to keep the consistency going. I was very close to calling in sick tonight, but got to do it for the people, for the fans.
Wouldn't want the inmates to run the asylum with this podcast.
Absolutely not. So, so with that being said, thank you to everyone who tuned into the Mixler chat tonight. Thank you to everyone who's been listening. And if you've been enjoying the show, like always, please leave a rating and a review on iTunes. And we had a listener actually suggest this to us in on the DMs, Steve Hawking telling us, you know, if you enjoy the show and you're a Ducks fan, tell another friend, tell another Ducks fan who might not listen to it and get them on board. We want to bring in as many people as possible under this roof and doing a good job of it so far. But the more the merrier. Also, I always forget to mention this, but if you're listening to the pod and you just click it off of the link on Twitter, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, because this number of subscribers also really helps. So if you're not subscribed yet and you've been a pretty consistent listener, give it a subscription. SoundCloud.com/ACPod. That's where we are at on SoundCloud. And as always, AnaheimCalling.com, @AnaheimCalling on Twitter for all your Ducks content needs. Jake has a much anticipated weekly ranking coming out next week, ranking Anaheim Calling staff.
Oh yeah,
so that should be fun.
I forgot I committed to that for this weekend. So
look for that on his Twitter @ReindeerGames91.
Yep, it will be coming out on Monday. Just as a reminder that it's been moved from Saturday or Sunday to Monday mornings.
Yes. So his rankings are now on Mondays. We try to catch that morning crowd on the Monday. I'm on Twitter @Felix_Sicard, tweeting out the podcast, writing. So a lot of good stuff. If you're a Ducks fan, we have you covered from a bunch of different angles. So we really appreciate the support. We really appreciate your listenership. And on that note, we will catch you post Montreal Canadiens game on Saturday, probably an early edition, early afternoon. Should be a lot of fun. We will talk to you then.
Bye.